Not too bad.
Good.
Sorry, it's just about zero.
Oh, wow.
I know you like it when it's minus 20, but not there.
I wanted to try...
I hope this didn't mess you up too much that we were an hour later.
Last week it would have been a problem, but this week it worked out. I wanted to... before I ask you why you celebrate Hanukkah so many extra days in Canada... I was curious to know if you wouldn't mind joining me on a little bit of an experiment. I started studying Meshech Chachma of Rabbi Simcha Mitvinsk. And I wanted to see if we could appreciate his approach. So we'll call this a one-time shot. What I think is amazing and very unique about Rabbi Simcha is that he integrates what we call parshanut, meaning when he has problems in understanding the text, he's very sensitive to the text, very sensitive to the words, the sequence of the words, to try to find the meaning of the words, but to integrate that with halacha. He's a first-class Talmudist, halachist, a giant in Torah. He's perhaps most famous for his work on the Rambam, the Or Sameach. But to integrate chidushim in pshat with halacha, that I find very, very unique. So let me see if I can give a few examples from Parshas Vayigash that I started studying. Now, what you definitely need for this, if you have a Meshech Chachma, that's great, but at least, at the very least, a Chumash. And we're going to open up to Perek Mem Hei of Breishis. Now, Yosef notifies Paro that his brothers have come down to Mitzrayim, and Paro now instructs the Bnei Yaakov as to what they should do. And this you'll see beginning in Pasuk Yud Ches. Paro instructs them, Chu es avichem v'esbatechem ubo elai. And he promises them chelif ha'aretz in Mitzrayim. Then in Pasuk Yud Ches, v'ata tzuvesa zos asu. Now here Paro is continuing with his mandate, if you will, his command to the brothers of Yosef, Zosasu, this is what you should do. Until now he's spoken in sort of broad strokes. Bring down your father, your entire household, settle here in Mitzrayim, you'll eat from the Chelev Haaretz. Now he gets in specifics. Chulachem, you're about to go back to Eretz Canaan, to your father. You're going up to fetch your father. Take with you from Eretz Mitzrayim agalos, and with these agalos, these wagons, you will transport your children, your wives, and you'll bring your father down to Mitzrayim. That's what we see is the command of Paro in Pasuk Yud Ches. Now the impression you get here is that Paro commands the people of Israel, the Bnei Yaakov, to do whatever is necessary to take the Agolos out of Mitzrayim. Now let's for a moment fast forward to Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And Pasuk Chaf Aleph is the cue, is the implementation. And the Torah records, Vayasu Kein B'nei Yisrael, they did exactly as they were told. Vayite Lehem Yosef Agalos Al Pi Paro. The impression you get is that Yosef supervised this whole enterprise of the Agalos, and he did so Al Pi Paro, because Paro had thus commanded them. But the action or the implementation of the Agalos was done by the Bnei Yaakov, meaning whatever was necessary. Yosef prepared the Agalos as he was commanded to do, and then it's safe to assume that the Bnei Yaakov, fulfilling as it were the tzivui that appears a little bit earlier, as we saw in Pasuk Yutes, after Tzuvesa, they took the Agalos, did the final preparations, whatever was necessary, and they took those Agalos back to the house of Jacob, back to Eretz Canaan. And this seems to be the pshat of Rashi and the Rashbam. But Rabbi Simcha says there is here a kind of, if I could use the phrase, dangling modifier, meaning there's a phrase here that can go either way. It says here, Vayitein lev Yosef Agalos, and then it says, Al Pi Paro. Now, if you put a pause in the middle of this pasuk, Vayitein lev Yosef Agalos, and then the Al Pi Paro is going to explain that this is the fulfillment of what we saw a few psukim earlier, the tzivui zosasu of Paro. Rabbi Simcha says there's another way of interpreting the pasuk. Instead of putting a pause here, you could interpret that the agalos were al pi paro. That there's something in the agalos, we're not sure what that element is, that requires implementation al pi paro. In other words, it's not that Paro gave it tzivui, they fulfilled the tzivui by preparing and bringing the agalos, and al pi paro is just telling us something which lechor is obvious, that they were in fact doing what Paro had commanded them. No, there's another way of learning it. It could be that the Al Pi Paro, those words, are emphasizing something about the agalos. That the manner and the method by which these agalos were prepared had to be Al Pi Paro. Not the general Al Pi Paro that Paro had commanded them to go up to Eretz Canaan with the agalos, bring back their families in the agalos, and so forth and so on. But there is this one pinpoint, one detail within the entire story that emphasizes that in this episode, that detail required Al Pi Paro. And here's where Rabbi Simcha puts on his halachic thinking cap to shed a new light on these three words, Al Pi Paro. Now, if you happen to have, I don't know if any of you have the Meshech Chochma, every section begins by telling you what perek and what pasuk. So therefore, no matter what edition, and there are many, many different editions of the Meshech Chochma, you will be able to locate Mem Hei Chof Aleph. Why does Rabbi Simcha take Al Pi Paro and attach it to Agalos? And he does so based on two premises. One is more of a, shall we call it, sociological premise. The other is a halachic premise. The first is, since the Torah later on in Parshas Shoftim, in Sefer Dvarim, tells us that a king of Israel is not allowed to have too many horses, that's called Ribui Susim, which is a lav in the Torah. The Torah actually explains why. One of the few examples of a law in the Torah, in Lo Saseh, where the Torah gives, offers the explanation. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that was a mistake, by the way, because as a result, Shlomo HaMelech was nichshal. But be that as it may, that's not for us now. The Torah says, "V'lo yashiv es ha'am mitzrayma," which means that if the king has an insatiable desire for susim, apparently the horse, I guess when I was a youngster, you'd call it a Rolls Royce. The horse was the Rolls Royce of that civilization. So the king wants to show the world, look how many Rolls Royces I have. Or the other cars, Lombardis and so forth and so on. So he shows that he has a massive amount of susim. Where is he going to find these susim? And he wants to get the best horses on the face of the globe. He takes the people back to Mitzrayim. Because in Mitzrayim, says Rabbi Simcha, they breed the finest horses on the face of the earth. Now, what happens if the horses of Mitzrayim, which are the best and the proud and joy of Mitzrayim, if those horses get exported? So Rabbi Simcha says, to export horses from Mitzrayim, you must have a special license from the government. Why? Because we don't want to share our great possession, our prize horses, with the other nations of the world. But here Rabbi Simcha takes it one step further. And he says that not only did you require a license, a special governmental permission, but you also required what's called sirus. You would have to castrate the horses. And the reason for that, again, in Rabbi Simcha's mind, is very simple. Because once you export the horses, then in that country receiving the horses, they could breed the horses, and they could produce horses on the same level, Mishubachos, like Mitzrayim. And then Mitzrayim loses its monopoly over this breed of horses. So they needed sirus. So you, number one, before you took the horses out of Mitzrayim, you had to get a license. And number two, you had to castrate the horses. That's called sirus. And in order to prove this, he quotes a statement of Chazal in the Gemara Bechoros. This is not the halachic part. We're not up to the punchline yet. And Chazal tell us that when they exported cows from Mitzrayim, they removed the rechem. They did a hysterectomy. The rechem of the cow. And the Gemara tells us the reason for that is because in Mitzrayim, they were breeding such wonderful cows and swines that they didn't want any other country to be able to get a hold of those great cows and swines and reproduce them. So they required to remove the rechem before they would allow export. The Gemara there in Masechet Bechoros vacillates back and forth whether the cow could continue to live after they remove its rechem, or it's a trefa. So the Gemara records that Rabbi Tarfon took these cows after they were subject to that hysterectomy, and he fed them to the dogs, because Apparently, the Gemara says he held that they were treifa, the animal couldn't survive such a surgery. Well, not for a long time in any event. The Chachamim in Yavda allowed this cow to be shechted. It's not a treifa. And the proof was because Mitzrayim was exporting these castrated cows, and the buyers apparently were buying something that was viable. It wasn't going to drop dead over this because of this operation. So it means it's not a treifa. In any event, getting back to our main subject, Rabbi Simcha sees that in the process of preparing these agalos, these wagons, which were horse-driven wagons, we needed a two-stage process. Number one, we needed to get a rishayon. We had to get the official governmental license. And number two, they had to be serious. And here's where Rabbi Simcha puts on his halakhic thinking cap to change the whole shot in the puzzle. And he says the following. Sirus asur libnei noach. This is a sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin Nunvav, the famous sugya of Sheva Mitzvos b'nei noach. A very long sugya, goes over three blot Gemara. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Chidka, who is the Amora that maintains that a ben noach is asur b'sirus. That sirus is included under the B'nai Noach. Ayin Shom, you'll see exactly how Rabbi Chidka proves his conclusion. So now the question is, who is supervising the process of Sirus? If Rabbi Simcha is correct in his assumption that you can't just export horses from Egypt, you need Sirus, who is the one who is actually supervising this Sirus process? And from the other commentaries on the Torah, when you read this pasuk, Vayitein lehem Yosef hagalos, you get the impression that it was Yosef. So Yosef was the viceroy of Mitzrayim. He gets together his various, his various servants, and he tells them to send these hagalos with his brothers to Eretz Canaan, which means that these hagalos that are going to be driven by horses have to be castrated. The horses have to undergo sirus. And here, Rabbi Simcha proves from another sugya, in a few places in Shas, that a ben noach is not only enjoined from the seven mitzvahs, but he's also enjoined from lifteivim, meaning he's not allowed to see to it that another ben noach will violate the Isur of Sirus. So therefore, Rabbi Simcha, by implication, asks the following question. How could it be that Yosef would oversee the process of supervising the agolos with the susim, and thereby violate the Isur of Lifteiver, because it was other Egyptians who would be involved in the process implementing Sirus? And since a ben noach, according to Rabbi Chidka, is enjoined from Sirus, then Yosef is not allowed to have a ben noach, facilitate the ben noach implementing Sirus.
No.
Just 1 minute. Now we're at the punchline. Says Rabbi Simcha, now let's go back to the pasuk. The pasuk al pi paro, that three word addition, is not coming to tell you that all the above was a fulfillment of the Tzivui of Paro. Nay, the Alpi Paro is coming to describe the Agolos. Attach those words, Alpi Paro, to the Agolos. And that means that Alpi Paro, Paro would be the one who would give the command to supervise and implement the Sirus. So that Yosef, and for that matter, any of his brothers, would not get involved in preparing the agolos, meaning the susim, through the surgical operation of Sirus, because that would be in violation of Lifteiver. So lo mi boy, that they themselves wouldn't do the Sirus, but they wouldn't even supervise, or Yosef wouldn't supervise, and command his people to do the Siris, because that would be an additional violation, which applies to Ben Noach, of Lifnei Iver. That's based on, as I said before, a few sugyas in Shas, primarily a Gemara in Bav Metzia. Vizel, this is how he concludes, Al Pi Paro, that Yosef had to step aside when it came to preparing the Susim and send this back to Paro, not only to receive a license from Paro, but moreover to guarantee that it would be Paro's headache if he would oversee the process of Sirus, but Yosef would in no way get involved. Joe?
I just don't understand. I'm sorry, why do they have to castrate the horses? They're coming back. It's not as if they were selling them to
But Paro understood that it would take a good couple of months until they could finally gather together all their belongings, and in that moment all they need is just a moment of time, you know, to pull off one Israeli horse and breed it with one Egyptian horse, you know, for a one night stand, if you pardon the phrase, and that would be enough to propagate. Again, we hold in animals, we go as leader buses zera ha'av. Right, it's the father of the animal that determines the zera. But why do I share this with you? Because it really changes our understanding of the pasuk. It is very creative because it's against all the Rishonim. But moreover, it's Rabbi Simcha using his halachic thinking cap to shed a light on the pasuk that the Alpi Paro is the way in which the Yosef and his brothers were able to circumvent the Iser of Lifnei Iver. But this entire structure of Rabbi Simcha is predicated on the assumption that Rabbi Chitka is right in Sanhedrin Nun Vav that Ben Noach is enjoined from Sirus. However, here Rav Cooperman, who writes the footnotes, again, it depends on what edition you have, but in my edition, footnote number 8, he points out that in fact, we don't paskin like Rabbi Chinka. We paskin ein b'nei noach muzharim al asirus. If that be the case, why is Rabbi Simcha doing somersaults in the air to reinterpret the pasuk based on Rabbi Chinka? We don't accept Rabbi Chinka. Our maskana is that a Ben Noach is enjoined from 7 mitzvos, but not Sirus. So I was very fascinated that Rav Cooperman, in the last 4 lines of this very long footnote, he says the following. When Rameir Simcha and Meshech Chachma interprets the psukim, he's not interested in reconciling the psukim with halacha lemaisa. He's only interested in what he thinks is pshuto shel mikra, and if that will justify or be justified by one particular sheet in the Gemara, in Torah, he calls the Torah Shmal Peh, even if we don't paskin like that, by the Omar, it sheds an entirely different light on the puzzle. And when I read this, immediately in my mind, I thought of the famous dictum of Chazal Shivim Panim LaTorah, that the Torah can be understood in so many different ways. And Rabbi Simcha is going to use Talmud, Torah Shebaal Peh, to shed a light on the Torah, even if it's a new light, that Shivim Panim LaTorah, and even if it reflects an opinion in the Gemara, which we don't paskin like. So again, if you were writing a halachic sefer, based on the fact that we paskin that ain't Ben Noach Mitzuv Al Sirus, then this entire paragraph would be omitted, and we could go with the classic understanding of the pasuk. But if you're not writing a pirush al Torah al pi Shulchan Aruch, but rather you're writing a pirush al Torah al pi pshuto shel mikra, then if you want to justify one particular sheet in the Gemara that opines that halachically a Ben Noach is enjoined from Sirus, then what you do is you attach the word agolos to Alpi Paro. And if you do so, then it was Paro who would supervise the process of Sirus. Now at this point, I'd like you to fast forward to Perek Mem Vav. And again, Yes, please.
It's a question. Why can't you say that you could use Remer Simchas Pshat and go la halacha? In other words, Yosef didn't want to do the Sirus. So he said Par has to do the Sirus, which would be okay, Par can do the Sirus.
Right, Remer Simchas assumes, Bobby, that that Yosef could have easily commanded the other Egyptians to do the Sirus.
Yosef wouldn't want to command, like, even if it's mutter for a guy to do it, but if it's on your command, you prefer not to, that you don't not
maybe. But Bobby, you have to keep one thing in mind. Rabbi Simcha, and again, I don't have time to go through about five other pieces, is of the opinion that up until Matan Torah, there was only a din of Ben Noach. Nobody had a din of Yisrael.
Oh, so in other words, he would have been allowed to do it himself.
Correct. So why was he avoiding it? And for that, Rabbi Simcha has to invoke the sheet of Rabbi Chidka.
I have a question.
Yeah, David?
So according to yourself, if you're very with Ben Noach, well, where does Lufthaner come from? What else did
you say? Say it one more time.
If everybody's Ben Noach until about the Torah, there's no
favor.
Why is that a problem?
No, but they archive. They have.
I missed it. There's no something.
No, they don't.
That's not necessarily true.
But I didn't hear. There's no something or other.
Does a Ben Noach have a favor?
Yes, Ben Noach has a favor. That's a good, that's a sugya in Eilu Mitzir in Bam Mitzir Tzadi Omid Beis.
Just to me.
So, for example, a Ben Noach would not allowed to serve Abram ben Achai to another Ben Noach. Why? But that has to do with a lot of loveness. You all heard of the Panovich of Rav Kahanovich. So he has a piece on Lifteiver which is absolutely stunning. And he tries to prove that Lifteiver is not a separate Avera, but rather it's built into each Avera unto itself. Again, that's an hour Shia, not for us now. But if you take a look,
the Pasuk is Meduyek, where it says, Vayitelem Yosef Agolos. In other words, it doesn't say Vayika Agolos Vayitem Lahem. In other words, he gave them already what was a completed thing.
Right. And who completed it was Alpi Paro. Paro gave the final command. Okay, now if you take a look at the first pasuk in the next perek. And again, I prepared about five pieces for you today, so we'll see how many of them we'll get to. It says the following. At the end of Perek Memhei, Yosef is alive. Yaakov says, Elcha v'ere b'term yomus. And then the Perek begins, Memvav. He prepares for the trip. He's going down to Mitzrayim. And he stops off in Beersheba in order to bring a korban. Vayizbach zvachim lelokei aviv Yitzchak. Vayomer elokim liYisrael b'maros halayla. So Rabbi Simcha has three questions here. Question number one: why is he bringing the zevach lelokei aviv Yitzchak? The Torah went out of its way to emphasize this is the God of his father Yitzchak. Why is that so? Question number two, a zevach is what's called a karbon behema. On two occasions before this one, the Torah records that Yaakov set up a matzeva. But in both cases, as we'll see in Rabbi Simcha inside in a minute, Yaakov doesn't bring a zevach, he doesn't bring a karban behema, but rather he brings what's called nisachim. He pours yayin and shemen on this matzeva. So you can ask the question in two directions. Number one, why are we waiting until this juncture, until Yaakov brings a karban, meaning a zevach behema? And number two, why is it that here in this context, it seems that he brings a zevach and he doesn't bring shemen? There's no nisuch of shemen. Why not? We know that when a person brings a karbon, then there's something called a Nesach Haba im HaKarban. So initially, back at the time of Vayetze Yaakov, when he has the dream, there he wakes up from the dream, he sets up a Matseva, and he brings Yayin on the Matseva, Shemen on the Matseva. Fine. So that Shemen is not a mitzvah of the Sachim Haba im HaZevach. For whatever reason, he couldn't bring a Zevach, which we have to understand. But now that he's bringing a Zevach, why does he drop the ball, so to speak, on Shemen? Why not bring the Nesach together with the Karban, which is the Sachem HaBoyim and HaKarban? Question number three. Why is it that God appears to Yaakov Avinu b'maros halayla? Now, I'll be honest with you. I read b'maros halayla, I could have read it 1,000 times, I never would have blinked. But Rebbe Simcha notices that time after time, the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to Avram, appears to Yitzchak, and it never says b'maros halayla. Only with regard to Yaakov does it say b'maros halayla. So these are the three kashas of Rebbe Simcha. And I looked in the Mefarshim, and what did I find? Zippo. I did not find an answer to any of these three questions. You know, again, part of the fact that I sometimes make these emotional comments, but the Torah has been around for a good couple of thousand years. You know what I'm saying? Like when Rabbi Simcha lives in the year 1920 and he's asking kashas, the answers to which we can't find, not in the Rishonim and not in the Achronim. And I can fill up this entire living room with books and commentaries on the Torah. Okay, that's just an emotional comment. To answer the first question, he says the following. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Megillah, in terms of the relationship between Yaakov and Yitzchak, Yaakov owed his father one. He owed him one. Because for 22 years, during his stay in Beis Lavan, etc., etc., he was not available to service his father. Now, elsewhere, Rabbi Simcha has a long discussion about Esav's chutz. And Esav's chutz is that during those 22 years, he was mechaved Aviv. But where was Yaakov? Now, you and I can give many, many different answers to that question, where was Yaakov? But the bottom line is that the Gemara tells us that Yaakov was punished because of the absence of Kibbud Avaim. Now Yaakov is about, at this moment, he's at a transitional moment, a critical Parshas Drachim, he's about to go down to Mitzrayim. He's now going to be under the tutelage, so to speak, under the control of Yosef, who's the Mishnah Levela. HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes a person Mida Keneged Mida. And if Yaakov was being punished for his lack of Kibbud Av, then here's the opportunity, thought Yaakov, in the Ribbono Shel Olam's master plan to mete out that punishment against Yaakov. Yosef would not fulfill the mitzvah properly of Kibbud Av. That was the fear of Yaakov Avinu. So in order to sort of placate his father, I don't mean that literally, but rather l'orer rachamim, so that his father Yitzchak would not be a cause of punishment and anguish for Yaakov. Yaakov brings the carbon at this very important juncture when he's about to come under Yosef's subjugation, al shem Aviv Yitzchak lechavdo, so that from the perspective of the Meshech Chachma, the Elokei Aviv Yitzchak is a great fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kibbud Av. And this, my friends, touches on the very essential definition of what Kibbud Av is. We mistakenly think that Kibbud Av exhausts itself in physical service. It goes way beyond that. For example, just one example of millions, the Gemara tells us in Kedusha that for the first 12 months after his father's death, he has to say Areni Kaparas Mishkavo. And during his father's lifetime, if he wants to retrieve something and he's asking someone to give him or sell him, he should always say, do it in honor of my father. Even though it's not an act of service, and certainly not posthumously. But the concept of Kibbud Av is an abstract concept that has to do with spirituality and with mitzvahs. If this mitzvah of Zevach is going to be fulfilled al Shem Aviv Yitzchak, that changes the whole essential spiritual nature of the Zevach, and it's a Kibbud of Kibbud Av. Now again, if we had time, I would pontificate to you on this psychological principle that is, shall I say, dormant or inherent in Rabbi Simcha, that if you don't fulfill Kibbud Av Va'em vis-a-vis your parents, it's going to boomerang against you in the next generation. And that's a psychological principle, because if your son did not see you as a paradigm, as an example of Kibbud Av towards his grandfather, meaning towards your father's father, he's not going to be a great fan of Kibbud Av as well. But that's a whole different discussion. It has nothing to do with Rabbi Simcha. Why is Yaakov Avinu bringing a zevach, a behemah, a karbon? And if we're talking about a karbon v'nedava, we're talking probably about a shlomim. At this moment, at this juncture, says Rabbi Simcha, put on your halakhic thinking cap and open up to the Gemara in Moed Katan Tesvav that darshins the word shlomim, that when are you allowed to bring a karbon shlomim bizman shu shalem, which means two things. That number one, an avel, rachmana litzlan, during Shiva, is not allowed to send the karbon shlomim to the Beis HaMikdash. He himself can't leave his house, but he would send it through a shliach. He's not allowed to do so because it's dafka bizman shu shalem. He has to be in the sense of simcha, of shlemus. And the same did applies to a person who's in nidui. Yosef leaves Yaakov. And Yaakov mistakenly gives up Yosef for dead. And therefore, Yaakov's psychological state of anguish, despair, and grief is avelus for all the years that Yosef is gone. And therefore, Yaakov's Avinu's status is identical with that of an Avel. He does not have the possibility of bringing a Karban Shlomim. But now the Pasuk says, the last Pasuk in Perek Mem Hei, Vayomer Yisrael, Rav Od Yosef Bini Chai. And the previous Pasuk says, Vatachi Ruach Yaakov Aviel. And Chazal say, it's based on Targum Unkelis, that Vatachi is Ruach HaKodesh. All of a sudden, Yaakov finds out that Yosef is alive. His state of Avelus terminates, and he enters into a new state of Nevuah, Ruach HaKodesh, of Atachi Ruach Yaakov Aviel. There is no longer a deficiency in his Shlemus, and therefore he's ready to bring a Karban Zevach. And Rabbi Simcha wants to shed a new light in this context on the word kol. It says in the pasuk, "Vayisa Yaakov v'chol asher lo." And the pashtus before Rabbi Simcha is that he gathers together his whole household. Says Rabbi Simcha, "No. V'chol asher lo means all the parts of his nefesh. Yaakov gathers together his whole nefesh, all its segments, because now it's not broken down into different parts, but rather it's in a state of shlemus, and that's kol ha-shalom. Hence, Yaakov goes down to Be'er Sheva. What does he do in Be'er Sheva? He sets up a mizbeach, and on this mizbeach, vayizbach zvachim, he brings his karbonos. It's the first time in Yaakov's life that he's able to bring karbonos. So Rabbi Meir Simcha asks, what about the Yayin v'Shemen, which we find that Yaakov, back in Parshas Vayetze, in Perek Chav Ches, Vayikach Es Ha'Eved Asher Sovi Rashosov, Vayosem Osa Matzeva Vayitzok Shemen Al Rosha, We also find in Parshas Vayishlach in Perek Lamed Hey Vayotzev Yaakov Matseva, and it says in the pasuk Matseva's Evan Vayosach Alav Nesech. It's not exactly clear what that Nesech was, but at least Ibn Ezra identifies it as this Keyayin, and in addition he pours Shemen on the Matseva. Says Rabbi Simcha, there are two fundamental differences, al pi halacha, between the first two episodes of Yaakov and this third episode of Yaakov. The first difference is that in the original episodes, Yaakov does not build a mizbeach, but rather he builds the erects a matseva, which means something that's made of one large stone. When you have a matseva, although you're allowed to do nesachim on a matseva, but yet you're not allowed to bring a zevach. Only here, at this point, that we have to understand why, Yaakov is able to erect a mizbeach, which is made up of many stones. Hence, Yaakov is able to bring a carbon behema on this mizbeach. But Rabbi Simcha goes beyond that. And invoking a sugya at the end of Masechta Menachos, you know, somebody asked me today why I don't learn Daf Yomi. So my answer is because of Menachos. I tried learning Menachos. I couldn't get by the first Daf in Menachos. Anyway, so what does it say at the end of Masechta Menachos? It says that there are two categories of nesachim. One is a nesach that's brought as an accompaniment to either a korban mincha or a korban zevach. And then there's something called a nedava of a nesach, which is bav b'fnei atzma, which means that even if it doesn't accompany a zevach, you are allowed to bring yayin and shemen as a nesach, and on a voluntary basis fulfill the mitzvah of nesachim, of niske yayin v'shemen, and that mitzvah does not require mizbeach. So again, if these nesachim are bayim im akarban, if they're accompanying a karban, such nesachim could only be brought on a mizbeach together with a karban zevach. If, on the other hand, it's an edava of niske yayin v'shemen, the Gemara has a whole sugya in Masechta Zvachim that I was able to learn in Masechta Zvachim about a nidvas niske yayin when he pours the yayin directly onto the fire, he puts out the fire. So that's the famous sugya, because there's an isur lav not to lower the flame on the mizbeach. That's the famous sugya of Dover Shadim Iskavin with the psikration of the Lo Nichole. Any event. So now, in the first two episodes, Yaakov sets up a matseva. He cannot bring a zevach on a matseva. He needs for that a mizbeach. But what he can do is he can bring in a dova of niske yayin v'shemen. That's called boim bifnei atzma, not as an accompaniment ima zevach. Oh. However, we have to understand one thing, and that is that in nedava we have two possibilities. There's no third possibility. The two possibilities are what's called a yachid or a tzibur. Between yachid and tzibur, right down the middle, we have something called shutfim. And here Meir Simcha quotes a sifra that says, Ein shnayim misnavnin mincha, a karma mincha and a nedava. And likewise, the sifra adds a nedava of yayin, eitzim, shemen, etc. There's no such thing as shutfim. You have only two options, Yachid or Tzibur. Says Rav Meir Simcha Kan, in our case, where Yaakov is bringing a Zevach, what is the status of that Zevach? Says Rav Meir Simcha, it's a Korban HaShutfim. Why is it a Korban HaShutfim? Because, and here Rav Meir Simcha invokes a statement of Chazal, that when Yaakov brought this Korban, he brought it not only for himself, but for all his children. The problem is, how many of his children were with him in Eretz Canaan? 11 out of 12. Yosef was in Mitzrayim. And therefore, that korban that Yaakov Avinu brings on the Mizbeach is a korban shutfim, which he brings on behalf of almost all of Klal Yisrael. But he doesn't have all of Klal Yisrael, so it cannot be a korban tzibur. V'ayachaser Yosef u'bonav Shehayim Mitzrayim, Yosef and his descendants, Ephraim Menashe, etc., etc., were in Mitzrayim. And therefore, there was no possibility of bringing a Korban Tzibur. If it had been a Korban Tzibur, then Yaakov would be allowed to accompany a Korban Tzibur with a voluntary attachment of the Sachim. However, in this particular case, where we have a Korban Shutfim, the law is that a Korban Shutfim does not allow a Nedav of Nesachim. Hence, says Rav Meir Simcha, we now understand why in this parasha there's no mention of Shemen. Because in this parasha, Yaakov Avinu is bringing a Korban Shutfim, Mishfil Kol Bonah. And in the case of a Korban Shutfim, you're allowed to bring a Korban Shutfim, let's say a Shlamim, on a Mizbeach, but you cannot accompany that Shlamim with Niskei Shemen or Niskei Yayin, because Niskei Shemen, Niskei Yayin could only come in one of two possibilities, either in a Korban Yachid or in a Korban Tzibur. Now again, Rabosai, if you're not learning Kodshim, you know, you would probably walk out of here saying, Rabbi Berzon hacked my chinix over here, I'm not learning Kodshim, what does he want from my head? But if you are a little bit oriented in Kodshim, it's just amazing to see how Rabbi Meir Simcha is able to put the pieces together in order to come up with a viable pshat and answer his questions. And now we get to the main question. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu appear to Yaakov b'maras halayla? Says Rav Meir Simcha, in order to understand the answer to that question, you have to see a Gemara in Brachos and ask yourself another question. The Gemara tells us in Brachos that Avraham Avinu established Tefillah Shachris, Yitzchak Mincha, and Yaakov Ma'ariv. Why is Yaakov establishing Ma'ariv? Then Rabbi Simcha says you have to add another Gemara. The Gemara says Tfilos Keneged Karbonos Tiknu. Now the Beis HaMikdash is closed for business at night, so I could understand, you know, the Karbon Tomid Shel Shachar and Shachris in the morning of Avraham Avinu, Tomid Shel Ben Arbayim of Yitzchak, and that's Mincha. But what's Yaakov here? Well, what's he doing? He's establishing a Tfilas Arvis? There's no Karban Arvis. There's no Karban that's brought at night. Says Rav Meir Simcha, when you bring a Karban during the day, if night falls and there was not opportune, ample time for the Evarim and the Pedarim to burn on the Mizbeach, then since you did the Akrava, meaning the Shechita, and then all the Avodas, the Zrika, you did during the day, then the Hakravas, Haktaras, Haimurim, which is called the Evarim and the Pedarim, could continue into the night. And anyone who learned the first daf in Brachos knows exactly what we're talking about over here. Mamas Haikorin Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. And it all has to do with the Evarim and the Pedarim and the karma that was brought during the day. Says Rav Meir Simcha, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu appear to Yaakov Avinu at night? And in order to answer that question, you have to know a Gemara Bo'i Kotten about Yechezkel HaNavi. The Gemara says, Ein Ashkina Shora B'chutz Laretz. There's no Shkina in Chutz Laretz. If there's no Shkina in Chutz Laretz, how could Yechezkel prophesize in Chutz Laretz? Says the Gemara, the reason why Yechezkel is able to prophesize in Chutz Laretz is because he began his nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. And when he left Eretz Yisrael, he took the Shechina with him. Yaakov sees a revelation of the divine being, Bemaros HaLaila. At what juncture, at what moment, in critical moment in Yaakov Avinu's life? Just like we saw in Parshas Vayetze, here in Parshas Vayigash, the moment he's about to step into Chutz Laretz. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and he says, you know what? Yaakov, you're afraid of going to Chutz Laretz. After all these years, it was finally Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Aviem. You once again had the Shechina. Nevuah was returned to you. And now you're going to have to go down to Mitzrayim, Eina Shechina Shorah B'chutz Laretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to show up. B'maras HaLaila, says Rav Meir Simcha, Laila represents Golus. Yaakov, take the Shechina from Eretz Yisrael and bring it into Golus. And that's what Tefillas Arvis is all about. Tefillas Arvis represents Golus, the very bitter, dark Golus of Muncie, of Pittsburgh, of wherever you are. And take the Shechina from Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Meir Simcha, Umizeh Yotzeh Lanu Musar Haskel. Interesting. Rav Meir Simcha decides to give us a Musar Shmuz. And he says that when we go to Chutz Laretz and to Golus, can we have Shechina Imahem? Is it Imo Anochi Betzara, is God with us in Golus? And the answer is, it depends. Are we taking the Shechina and connecting to Eretz Yisrael? The Meir Simcha says that if we take that tradition from our forefathers, like Yechezkel took the Shechina from Eretz Yisrael, where God reveals Himself during the daytime, and now we're going into the bitter night of Golos, as long as we're connected to Eretz Yisrael, even during the bitter, long night of Golos, we can bring the Shechina with us into Chutz. And that was the message of hope and optimism that the Ribbono Shel Olam transmitted to Yaakov Avinu by revealing himself B'maros HaLaila, that very critical moment when Yaakov is about to step over the bounds. He's about to go south of Be'er Sheva and enter into Mitzrayim. So I just want to conclude with a tefillah that we should be zocheh to understand Hashem's Torah on all its levels. We should be able to be zocheh to a true tefillas arvis of Hashem's Hashchina, even in Chutz Laretz, with God protecting us. But we can only encounter the Shechina in Chutz Laretz, says Rav Meir Simcha, Mikan Yetzei Lanu Musar Haskel, that we have to be connected to the Shechina of Eretz Yisrael.